I'm so glad that mental health is talked about more now, because I think people have so much more awareness and recognition. I mean, my family had no idea what to do.
You're a huge mental health advocate. You share stories, you help people, you empower them, you allow them to become visible in a different way. And I think all of these experiences that you've been through, they've all obviously shaped you to be able to really empathize.
All I needed was someone to listen to me and to not judge me and just to give me a hug. People say to me, oh God, I didn't want to upset you, or I didn't know what to say. And I was like, there is no script. I'm going through it anyway. Just give someone a hug.
They are in the space of constantly just trying to fit in, but they know that that's not meant to be for them, but they don't know how to step in. What would you say to them as advice? Hi, Laura. Thank you for coming to Therapized. I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've read so much about your own work, and it has shed some light on some of my own issues or challenges that perhaps I need to work on. So thank you for that. But it's lovely to be here.
You know, I get that a lot. I get where people will read some of my posts and they'll say, oh my God, this describes me. How are you in my life? How are you watching me? And I think it's the beautiful thing from my end is when people see it and they start relating it and it helps them to understand what's going on for them. I think there's something really beautiful in giving them or empowering them. So I'm glad you've taken what you need from that.
Thank you.
And you are known for the word Flip It. That's what your business is currently called, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's coming. So hopefully I will be known a little bit more for Flip It. But yeah.
And could you give us some context behind what Flip It's all about?
So Flip It really is a combination of my own story and I guess Flip It is really, it's twofold. As a journalist and producer, I guess I was always primarily behind the camera, giving a voice to someone else or producing someone else. And so I decided to, one, flip the camera onto myself and be in the hot seat myself. But I guess it's also more about my family, my sister particularly, has always said, Laura, even in your darkest times, you've always managed to turn a negative into a positive. Like, I'm a really glass half full kind of person. And as we've all been through lots of challenges, I've always thought there is always two ways of looking at something. You know, either it's going to break you or it can make you. And so I guess I've always used, you know, stories as a way to help me to find comfort and to look at other people who have gone through something and perhaps use my own.
You're doing really well. Like, even when you talk about, you know, when you talk about the glass being half full and saying that, right, that my glass was half full. Have you always been like that? Or would you say that that's a more recent thing, or you've developed that from somewhere?
Yeah, my glass half full. I have always been like that. And I've actually thought about looking into the science of that, because I won't name names, but there are other members of my family who are glass half empty, no matter what. And I've always, my dad's pretty positive, but I've always been, where's the lesson or the opportunity, or, you know, having some blind faith that this is where I'm meant to be.
Also something very beautiful about that is that when you are at these crossroads, rather than thinking, oh God, what's wrong, or what should I do, or there's too much choice, or I'm just going to sit here, there's almost like, right, let's have a look left, let's have a look right, let's see what we can do both ways. And it feels like you have the awareness and the insight to be able to do that, which is really beautiful.
I didn't always. But I have always had a glass half full, which I think has sort of really helped me be a bit of a fighter through some difficult times. But Flip It is really flipping a negative into a positive. Life is full of ups and downs. That is just going to happen. And I think we all are more similar than dissimilar. We all fundamentally experience the same human emotions, grief, heartbreak. We all go through them. But if we can look at, perhaps help ourselves to look at these experiences in a different way, use them as lessons or opportunities for learning. And I do that, I guess, I think the most powerful way to do that is through stories, or stories of other people who have done the same. And I think, you know, fundamentally, I am a storyteller. I love stories. I love giving a voice to other people. And so Flip It is, I guess, twofold: me turning the camera onto myself for a change, and also flipping a negative into positive through the power of storytelling. So yeah.
And you say storytelling, like, what, when you say storytelling, what do you mean storytelling?
storytelling, it's funny actually. I interviewed the chief storyteller of Microsoft a while back, and Steve was the first person who was given a job title in a big company as storyteller. And I often still talk about this, and people are like, well, what do you mean by a storyteller? And I guess, you know, there are people who say a journalist is not a storyteller. They're very much more factual. And I, you know, as a journalist, my job is to present the facts, but I'm also creating a story that is going to be engaging and win the hearts and minds of someone. You know, when I was given a story, I would then think, okay, who is the best character to tell this story? Who's the audience? And this story might be, you know, I might be writing a story for the 6 o'clock news, but then that story also then has to engage a listener on Radio One, and the audience are completely different. So I guess I use a way of crafting a story that can be not universal, but using perhaps a narrative arc. You know, why do we watch Netflix or a great film? I started watching a program last night, and my attention span is pretty poor these days, probably thanks to social media. But last night I started watching this program. It's been massively hyped, and one day, and I was like, oh my gosh, I've watched 5 episodes, and that is really unlike me. But I thought about it. Now I look at it in a kind of different way, and I looked at the story and the characters, and why do you want someone to go on a journey? You're taking someone on a journey, and there has to be a resolution one way or the other. And so I think a story, you know, companies, individuals, you know, have a real power at their hands if they use stories as a way to connect people and to engage people, whether you're trying to sell them a service or a consumer. People find stories a much more authentic way of connecting. But individually, I think, you know, everyone says, oh, you know, I do fundamentally believe we all have a story, but I also believe that we have multiple stories. My story 3 years ago was very different to what it is today. My story even last month was very different because of the people or the characters that have come into my life and gone out of my life, and the stories that I've shared. We're all very different each day.
And I also suppose it depends on like what version you are at the time, because I think as we grow and as we experience, like you said, we can take learnings from these experiences, and that helps us to shape us into a different version. And when you look back like at yourself 3 years ago, you're like, what? Like, oh, that's a different story of who I was. And if this version of me was back there, things would have been a little bit different because I'm a different version. And it's like you said, it's capturing people's hearts essentially in this is what's happened, or this is what's happened, or this is what's happened. So people really connect with it, and it's the emotional connection that people get from listening to a story.
Yeah, 100%. Before we had any technology, we used to be, you know, sit around campfires and tell each other stories. That's how we learn about the world. And, you know, I still would love to sit around a campfire and tell a story, but we're all experiencing stories every day, whether we read something, whether we're listening to something. We all are selling stories, even in a conversation. I had a conversation at the supermarket with someone the other day. She told me a story, and I thought about it, you know, several days later. So I think, you know, stories are my passion, and
And even when you're talking there right now, Laura, for me, you've just said something really powerful about the campfire. And coming from a psychologist perspective and looking at society today, we are the loneliest we've ever been, and the impact of that physically. But when we go through these stories, there's almost like a relatable factor, and it goes back to connection, which is us being around that fire, connecting, telling stories, engaged, really being available. And I think there's something really beautiful about the storytelling that you share and how you share it with people, because it's not only connection, it's also you empowering people to share their voice, to share their story, and finding a way to be able to engage people in that.
Yeah. And honestly, if my story was still the same 3 years ago, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you now. My life.
So 3 years ago, what happened 3 years ago?
I keep referencing it, but it was a big change. You know, I was working at the BBC, and during the pandemic, I was allowed to work from home. And I was with my partner of 6 years, and we moved. We decided to move down to the country. And I won't share too much about his story because that's not fair. But we'd moved down to the country, and in the space of sort of 3 weeks, you know, we'd split up. And I then didn't have anywhere to live. And the BBC at the same time, my editor said, oh, Laura, I'm really sorry. I think you're going to have to come back into the office. The sort of, you know, the pandemic was not easing off, but you know, it wasn't, this restrictions weren't quite so severe. And I just couldn't make a decision. I was literally, I've never experienced heartbreak. Like I, to that, yeah, maybe I'd never experienced heartbreak before. I did not know my heart could actually feel like it was broken. I couldn't breathe at night sometimes. I was just, and so I was in no state to decide whether to go back to London. I didn't want to go back to London. I'm a real country person and I loved being down here, but I also like had no one here. Like I just didn't know anybody. And I was sort of living out of a bag in my car, listening to loads of different podcasts and walking on the beaches and listening to a lot of Eckhart Tolle of how to stay present in the moment. And so in the space of 3 weeks, my life, my story had changed beyond all recognition. And much of it was not in my, I was thinking it's not in my control, but one particular decision wasn't in my control. But I then decided to, when I talk about, you know, flipping a negative into a positive, I would be driving in my car and there would be tears coming down my face, but I would be looking at the countryside thinking, oh my God, it's so magical, or the sheep or whatever, because that's where I found my connection, or with the horses. You know, I'm a massive equestrian and I'm always a little bit reluctant to say that, because I always feel like some people, this is my own insecurity, people make judgments about people with horses and things. I know, as you can see, I have lots of horses in my world, but yeah. I was saying people make a bit of a, this is my insecurity, because they probably don't. You should probably keep this in. But I think people think, oh, if you've got a horse, you're like posh and stuck up and rich.
Isn't it so interesting, though, how we navigate life and who we talk to and how much we're in our own heads of like, oh, my God, people have this stigma of a horse. I don't see a horse like that. But I think that because of how we've experienced life and what we have come across in life, that our belief system, our map that we carry is, look, people think this about horses, or people think this about, because that's what we've known. And it's like, oh, I better not go and say this because someone's going to then judge me and I don't want to be judged by someone.
So I don't often sort of talk about it too much.
I think you should embrace it. It's so beautiful.
Impy is my best friend, like one of my best friends. I have a dog now, but she is like, horses have always saved me. Lisa, like, you know, wherever I've gone, I'd eat baked beans if I had to pay for the horse.
Laura, this is your story. This is such a beautiful part of your story right now. And a story part like you that perhaps were ashamed. And it's like, no, bring it out and share it.
Yeah. In fact, I'm looking at, there's a painting in front of me of him. But my mum always said, oh my God, Laura, you'll always find a horse before you found a house. Even when I was in London, I would beg, borrow and steal a horse. Like I would always be borrowing people's horses. Or like, I just love the whole mucking out. I love the smell of them. It's like the place where I felt safe and accepted. And animals teach you so much. They teach you to be present. They don't care. They don't, you know, they're on to something else. When I give Bear, my dog, like a bath after you've been for a walk, she's like, please don't. But then, you know, as soon as the hose is off, that's it. It's forgotten. She doesn't hate me for the rest of the day. And I think animals.
There's something about love, though, isn't there? There's like unconditional love that no matter what, yeah.
And they're just in that moment. And horses have taught me so much about myself. You have to really let go of control. You get what you are presented with on that day. And you might have to flip it into something else. You have one plan for something. But they've always helped me find friends as well. So when I moved down here, I bought my horse here. You know, I'm living in this house because the people who own the stables own the house. And I've got friends now. And it's so horses have always, you know, been a massive part of my story, I guess.
There's when you think of a horse, and I suppose they reflect, don't they? They're a mirror of us, and we can take away so much from them. What would you say your biggest learning is from a horse?
I think to let go. Let go of what you thought a situation was going to turn out like. You just have to turn up and work with what you've got. And, you know, I sort of suppose I'm not, I do compete, but I'm not by no means that great. But sometimes, you know, you have a plan of what you're going to do in your head and it just doesn't happen because you've got two living things working together. And you know, I have to be, anticipate maybe he's not feeling 100% today, or I'm not. And I think I think energy, I think actually that's probably one of the biggest things. He can pick up on my energy so much. And so even my instructor would say, what Laura have I got today? And if she knows that if something's in my mind or I'm distracted, that I might not be that confident, you know, in my riding, or and she has a great way of knowing which one have I got. And I can tell you that honestly, the difference when I go in there with a positive like mindset of, you know, we're going to do this, then he picks up on that. And so I think energy is it's a really big thing, even between humans. I think you can really, I really sense an energy even through a text message or someone's voice. And
isn't it so interesting how sensitive you are as a person, and how when you're connecting with people, even just animals respond back to your sensitivity. As humans, we all have our own shields, we all have our own defenses, and sometimes you can feel things with humans, but with the response that we're getting back can make us doubt ourselves, because we're saying something, we're feeling something, but we don't know where they are at in their awareness. So I wonder if you've always been a very sensitive person.
Oh my goodness, can't believe you asked me that question. It's because throughout my life I've always had people say, you're so sensitive, Laura. In fact, my dad used to say, you're too sensitive. And I found this graphic once. I sent it to him, hopefully you'll let me say it, but it said, maybe I'm not too sensitive, maybe you're just a dickhead. And you can edit that bit. And I sent it to
him. I think you need to send me that. I could send that to a few people.
It was so good. And I just thought, like, I used to think it was such a bad thing. I think, oh my gosh, like, you know, I really think too much, which, yeah, I do think, but I'm too sensitive. I need to, like, be a bit tougher, like, not let everything get to me. But I actually have learned, and I actually think it's one of the most beautiful things, possibly, I was going to say about me, but I see it in other people. I love people who feel and are vulnerable and don't just talk about the weather, but are actually willing to let me see a little bit of a side of them that they wouldn't normally. And so I don't think
vulnerability as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can't vulnerable. Be any different. I don't have to be any different. I just do. I am a sensitive person. I'm Pisces. I don't know. I'm not really massive into star signs, but I think that is one of the traits. But yeah, I am a pretty sensitive person.
Oh, I love that you're owning it right now, because for years and years, like, people will like start trying to suppress this part of them, thinking, I can't show that side because people have told me I'm too sensitive, and we don't want that rejection from other people. So what do? We just keep it down. And then we suppress the parts of us that are who we are. And this is where the high functioning side can come in, where we present as like, yeah, I'm like this, da, da, da. But actually behind the scenes, we might be more sensitive. There's things going on for us, but we're so afraid to show that side. And it feels like you're really stepping in. And I wonder if like Flip It has also been a big part of that journey, because you're being visible with your message. And how interesting, isn't it? It's like flip it into, I'm going to allow myself to be my sensitive self, and that's okay. It feels like there's so much with the energy of that.
Yeah, you're really insightful. Yeah, flip it. Well, the reason why it's been in fruition for about 2 years is because I have not wanted to put myself on social media or anything. Well, probably because I'm still full of a little bit of judgment, and it's also social media. I mean, I do it for other people. I produce a podcast for someone else, and I guess it's also, you know, fear of rejection, all these things that I have now learnt. It's about high functional anxiety, which we'll talk about. But
we'll talk about it on your podcast. Yeah. So anyone listening, tune into Laura's podcast.
Yeah, but it's I guess, yeah, it's putting yourself out there, isn't it? And when you put yourself out there, but I actually have done it. I actually did it. And I thought, if you do this, Laura, you have to let go of the outcome. And I have, and I guess what I hope I have, you know, it's inspired by my journal entries. I probably should have said that so much. I love writing. Writing is my thing. Numbers are not my thing, but words are my thing. And I've always had a journal on the go. I have, you know, tons of them. And whenever other people shared words and things on social media, actually, you say that we're more alone, and we are in many ways more alone, but actually those words that other people shared really helped me. And so I thought, well, I've got umpteen amounts of journals here. Why, you know, they're all about human conditions or experiences I've gone through. So the podcast and Flip It is really about my journal entries, and that's what inspired it, really.
Yeah, I think that when you're just like sitting down, journaling, reflecting, you've really allowed yourself to sit in with, okay, where am I at? And I think the thing that happened 3 years ago, like you said, that real physical pain that you felt and the choices that came up with that. But you've always had that mentality of, okay, how can I help myself, or what can I do? And I'm sure it's not that easy and that simple. And there must have been loads of different stories within that. But it feels like all of that has become part of your passion and your drive to why you want to do this now, but also helping other people to share their story.
Yeah. And I mean, when I talk about 3 years ago, I mean, some people would say, in many ways, it was, you know, everyone goes through a heartbreak. I was lucky. I wasn't married. I didn't have children. You know, I didn't have to live on the streets. I was in a bag, living out of a bag for a while. But, you know, there are other things in my life that have probably been much bigger. Well, there's one particular event that was much bigger. But I think, you know, whatever's happened, I've always found a way to, I guess I've used what's happened to me as motivation to maybe do better, do more. But that's possibly sometimes been detrimental to myself too.
Yeah, because that's, again, part of the high functioning is sometimes we want to avoid the emotion and we go to next thing to try and make it go away. But then eventually we're going to end up stopping and we have to face this thing that we're trying to run away from. And often this thing is just something that we've shut down from a young age, like guilt or shame or doubt, something, a fear of some sort. And once we face it, and I tend to relate that to like a shadow part of us. It's like when we're walking, the sun's shining on us, and then we can see our shadow on the floor. And sometimes we don't always acknowledge it, but it's there. And I see that as like, that's what's going on subconsciously for us. There's things happening. And until we don't face them, we can't integrate that into our life to be able to move on to the next sort of stage in life.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, that's really interesting. Your shadow, I have like a, you know, I have a therapist I speak to once a month, which is something I wouldn't have ever said ages ago. But I always think it's really important. It's helped me to have someone completely impartial to talk to. But she sort of talks about the shadow as like little Laura, the little Laura that was like left and almost in a sense, she was taught me about it, abandonment, but I have abandoned her as well. And if kind of when you're talking about the shadow, it feels like that. And there was a big shadow that, you know, my stepfather, when I was 18, he was killed in a car crash suddenly. And that really was a catalyst for my eating disorder, I guess. And it was that shadow, like it continued for decades because I didn't even know how to process grief. I didn't even know what grief was. And there was so much guilt wrapped around it. But if that shadow is still there, you can never move on.
And can you see, like you've just said, all of these different things that are going on, we don't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So that we find other coping strategies. Yeah. And you've mentioned there about an eating disorder. Are you okay to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, like, gosh, you know, it was almost 20 odd years ago that Michael died. And, you know, I always, when I say his name, sometimes I never know if I'm going to cry or not, but today it feels okay. But other days, you know, it doesn't. But he's probably been one of the biggest influences in my entire life and continues to today. But, you know, when he died, it was so sudden and I had so many things I wanted to say to him. And there's something about death which I'm exploring on the podcast because it's been such a big part of my journey, I guess, in that unprocessed grief is really different to a grief when, I mean, a grief of a death or a grief, any loss is a grief. I had to grieve this breakup of my partner, but with Michael, his death was so sudden. And it wasn't tied up in a nice little bow. I couldn't say all the things I wanted to say to him. And I looked at that when I looked at the difference between when my nan died, who was so beautiful and I loved her so much, but I got to say goodbye to her and there was nothing I didn't want to say to her. And the difference in how I felt was so the gap was so big, but when I didn't have the tools, I was 18 when Michael died and I didn't even know what was happening with me. And I didn't even know why I started to be funny around food. I mean, looking back, I probably always had a bit of an issue with food, but you know, I just went off on a gap year to Australia, didn't even process the grief. And then suddenly I was in the midst of being held, what I used to call it, held hostage of a terrorist that was just took over my body and my mind. And I mean, no one even talked about eating disorders then. It wasn't, I think Facebook had only just arrived. Goes to show how old I am. But no one knew what to do. My family had no idea what to do. They just were like seeing this, seeing me just like become a monster.
Hey there, are you ready to take your personal growth journey to the next level? I'm really excited to announce that my new online course is finally here. And in this course, we deep dive into topics we explore on this podcast, but with even more in-depth lessons, practical exercises, and personalized guidance. Don't miss out on this opportunity to invest in yourself and unlock your full potential. Enroll now and join me on this life-changing journey.
I wonder how that would have also impacted on you, because when you're going through something, you don't know what's going on. And then everyone's looking at you thinking, oh God, what do we do? How do we help? And I wonder if that also then adds in another layer for you, which is again, the guilt or the shame, or like you feeling like I'm being a burden, like other things that can come up where you feel overwhelmed with what's going on because you don't have the tools.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I just had no idea. I was on another plane. So it's only later when you start to realize that, yeah, you know, this is an issue, and then you're getting help for it. And I went into treatment in the States. You know, I was there for 6 months, and I was very lucky to go to a place that pretty much saved my life. But at the time when, you know, people were saying, you know, you've got an eating disorder, I was full of anger. And I think the anger was around grief and rage. And I was also, you know, struggling with some relationships within my family as well. And so I'm so glad that mental health is talked about more now, because I think people have so much more awareness and recognition. Parents, carers, I mean, my family had no idea what to do. But an eating disorder really is just, for me, it was never about wanting to look a certain way. It was, I didn't consciously wake up and decide to restrict my food. I guess it became, when you say, a coping mechanism, but because I didn't know how to process the emotions I was going through. And I think anyone who struggles with mental health is really struggling the same way. You know, it doesn't matter whether you drink, you take drugs, you gamble, you OCD, you know, all of the things are fundamentally an inability to have the equipment, I guess, to process what you're going through. And so the body in a way subconsciously finds a way to cope. And but I'm so glad that mental health is talked about in a
and you're a huge mental health advocate at the minute, aren't you? You share stories, you help people, you empower them, you allow them to become visible in a different way. And I think all of these experiences that you've been through, they've all obviously shaped you to be able to really empathize, offer compassion, to be able to really sit with people and understand what's going on.
Yeah, it was a time where I never shared my story. I was I was still so shameful of it. And there's also a time where it becomes like, you know, an elephant in the room. And I think that actually the BBC was the first place that I guess actually really helped me to be open about it. And there was an editor who is a really great guy, and he had suffered from depression, and he'd been to the States and was on sort of a secondment looking at how workplaces are more open about mental health. And he came back and said, I think we need to do something here at the BBC, and asked me if I would share my story as part of a campaign. And it kind of came out around the Heads Together campaign that the Royals did. And so we called it Open Up and Open Up More. And he asked me, and I thought, oh, God, no, I don't want to share my story. And then I thought, oh, Laura, everyone here knows it. They're all so supportive. And so I decided to do it. I was one of six. It was an internal campaign. You know, we had, you know, someone who'd been in Afghanistan, who had PTSD, and someone who had OCD. And it was a really powerful campaign that actually, I think, still runs today. But I shared my story. And after that, it kind of was a little bit, I guess I was so fearful. One, that it would jeopardize my career. Two, that, putting yourself out there, it just feels so like raw. It's like I was naked, but I had so much, you know, positive response from people who had even personally emailed me and said, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's really helped me to maybe go to my manager and share what I'm going through. And so it was kind of cathartic for me, but also there is a power in giving actually makes you feel good. And it's a lovely cycle. And I think stories, you know, stories are kind of a free gift we can all offer each other. And so I did then go on and share my story a lot more, and especially around, you know, the narrative in workplaces and how, you know, the idea that having a tick box of, you know, putting on yoga or nice things like that is going to help was fundamentally flawed to me. And I think places are changing a lot more, because really all I needed was someone to listen to me and to not judge me and just to give me a hug. And I always think, but, you know, I had people say to me, oh God, I didn't want to upset you, or I didn't know what to say. And I was like, look, there is no script. I'm going through it anyway. Just give someone a hug. Just acknowledge it, or just say, hey, how are you doing? And put your arm around them and say, how are you doing? And that goes a long way. And maybe I've used that in my journalistic way of like trying to enable people maybe to feel a little safer with me to share their story. And
I think that's really powerful as a human way of connecting, is just to be attentive. Like sometimes we can be talking to people and we're out for dinner and we've got our phones out and we're doing this and we're doing this, and are we really there? So when people want to share something and it's a big deal for them, if you're there like talking on your phone, your attention isn't there with the person. And again, we feel like, oh, I don't want to be a burden, or I don't want to talk. We've got all these little thoughts floating around that then just stop us from speaking out. But when you do share your story with someone who really hears you, it's life changing. And that's why I think therapy is so powerful, because you have that space to be able to, it's safe, it's non-judgmental. And I know you shared that you're in therapy. I'm also in therapy, and I don't feel like there's anything wrong with it, because people think there's something wrong if you're going to therapy. And it's like, no, it's a place to have that non-biased view of someone who will be able to guide you through your patterns. And we're never going to be this like perfect person. We're always going to be going through things, and things come up and it's like, right, what's going on here? I'm not really sure about this. And it's like, right, I can discuss this in my space to be able to understand what's going on. Then that helps you to navigate moving forwards.
Yeah, I've often thought I couldn't be a therapist. The amount of stories you must hear that you can't share.
Beautiful. I think it's beautiful just being able to honor someone's space and letting them come in and allowing them to be. And sometimes you see it when clients first come in, they're not looking at you there, that you can see how fearful and how scary it is for them. And when they start talking and you start noticing and you see them blossoming, like each session, and you keep seeing them grow and grow with confidence, and they come in, they're like, right, this is where I need to go and this is what I need to do. And I think there's something really, really powerful with watching them blossom, and to share that back with them and say, I'm noticing that you're changing in how you once were when you first came into therapy to where you are now, because you're with yourself every day. So you don't always know how you're changing and how you're evolving. So when you hear that back from someone, it's a really powerful thing to hear.
Yeah, it's like a butterfly. I guess you see a butterfly emerge. And it's so funny when you say that. It's like, you know, when you were little and you hadn't seen a family member for ages, and they were like, oh gosh, you've grown, haven't you? And you're like, have I? Like, you don't notice it when you see yourself, but when there's an absence, you then notice, don't you?
Yeah. And you said, I wanted to share as well, when you were talking about stories and sharing stories and just allowing someone, it's like there's a light, isn't there? There's a famous quote of, if you are just kind, I've really murdered this, but if you're kind, you just light someone else's candle, then they can light theirs, and it becomes a ripple effect. So when you're doing that, that's all we're doing. We're just lighting up the world. So when we find our light, let's share it with someone else. Let's let them ignite theirs, and then they share it with someone else. And that's how we can work as a society if we choose to. But if we don't learn to understand what's going on within us, or we don't find the right spaces to talk and to speak out what's going on, and we sit in that shame of I'm bad, no one's going to help me, or there's something wrong with me, we're never going to reach out to get that support that can change our lives.
Yeah, and I think stories are really powerful across different cultures, because when you share a story from someone else of a different culture, you create a kind of empathy and compassion, because you understand them from their perspective. And I always think travel is a great vehicle to do that. And I love traveling for that reason. I ended up on a flight from New York last year, and I spent the entire time, actually. In fact, it was a funny story because I had changed seats. I wanted to sit on the aisle, and I'd asked permission for that from the air hostess. But then when the person came to sit next to me, he was like, "Oh, this is my seat." And I said, "Oh." So we had a little bit of a conflict. And anyway, we worked it out, and he sat there, and I thought, oh, you know, I didn't want this to be, you know, an uncomfortable journey. So I kind of reached out to him and just said, you know, have you had a nice time in New York? Kind of conversation. That conversation then ended up being, we talked the entire flight. He was a Jewish guy. His story was amazing, actually. He was there helping kids, vulnerable kids in the Jewish community. You know, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I just thought that wouldn't have happened if it took probably me to reach out, but then him to engage in it. And we shared stories, and it was just a really wonderful. I never spoke to him again, but I still remember him. And I learned so much about his culture, and a whole different culture that I didn't really know about before. And yeah.
Can you see, you had a choice in that one moment. You could have turned around and been like, you know what, this is awkward. I'm going to sit in this awkwardness, and I'm not going to say anything. But you also had like, okay, let me just reach out and let me just see if this guy wants to talk or not. And by doing that, look what came about that. And it's making that one choice to be able to move. And I wonder if that's the way you've always been, is looking for these sort of opportunities, like you said, with the glass half full. I'm looking at it like, okay, what is this, or how can I work through this?
Yeah, sometimes I don't want to talk either. I'm not a huge chatter at times. He might have been like, oh, I just really want to talk. I just want to like get my head down. But he did. So that was a really great gift he gave me. But I think kind of before Flip It, obviously my sort of website is called Away With Words. And I called it that because so many people say, oh, you've got a way with words. You know, I had two fully grown, pretty old men in the space of 3 months. I was at two dinner parties, and two men, sort of, I sat next to these men that I didn't even really know. And they both said, I can't believe I'm telling you this. And it became a bit of a tagline. And I just thought, oh, maybe that's something that I don't know why people feel they can talk to me. But I think I'm always so blessed and so grateful that they do. And it feels a bit sort of like, I'm blowing my trumpet, and I'm not at all, because there's so many things I'm not very good at. And so if there's one thing I'm good at, maybe it's like allowing people to have a voice and to feel safe enough to talk to me. And that is, I feel so grateful that people do.
But I think there's something really beautiful about what you've just said. It's safe. People feel safe to come and talk to you. And is that also part of your sensitivity? Is that you really connect with people you see, you are able to sit with them, you want to hear them. And for that, people will want to talk to you. So is that the part of you that you feel is that's the piece that's there where it allows that connection, that real, real authentic connection to happen?
Yeah. I guess I'm really curious about people. I love to understand them, to find out. I always think there's light and dark in people. And I think fundamentally, I always like to look at people with lightness, even if they've done horrific things. I always like to think there was a reason, perhaps a reason why they did that. Can I understand that a bit better, or in their circumstances? And so I always meet someone with a curiosity, and I have friends from all different races, religions, cultures, and I just love it. I think it's a tapestry of life that we're all so different. I think being different, I listened to something the other day, and it really made me think, I don't know how many people there are on this planet, but so I don't want to, don't quote me on it, but there are billions of people on this planet, and there is not another person that is the same as you, that thinks the way you do, that looks the way you do, that feels the way you do. And I just think that is just amazing.
And isn't there so much learning from that as well? Much learning in how people see the world, how people are in the world. Like you talking about horses, there's someone else that might also be in like really connected to horses, and they connect with you now because you also know, or you share that this is what I like, or this is what I enjoy. But we learn so much from other people and about the way other people do. But it's interesting because as humans as well, we all want to be the same. We're all striving to want to be the same, but yet the learning is we're all so different, and it's embracing and standing in that unique version of us rather than thinking I need to be like everyone else. But there's this part of us that is striving for I want to be, and we're comparing and we're doing this and we're doing this. So there's these two different parts of us. One part which is like, I need to be like this, I need to be this, I need, because we're constantly filled with that in life. And then we've got the other part, which is we learn it's okay to be who we are.
Yeah, it's a real dichotomy that I think we all struggle and try and walk a tightrope of, because we all want to feel we belong. And yet we all try and sort of make ourselves look, say, speak a certain way to find that belonging. But at the same time, we really want to be our own person and stand out. And it's something that I've really struggled with, I guess. And one thing I learned was the difference between belonging and fitting in. I think I, for a lot of my life, tried to fit in. And when I looked at it, the difference between the two, fitting in requires you to compromise yourself and to mold yourself to be approved by a certain person or group or something. But belonging is when you can just be you and show up in your most authentic self and still feel that you are valid to be there. And so I've really had to sort of learn between the two, and I still would be someone who would want to fit in, but as I've gotten older, I'm less willing to compromise who I am in order to do that.
Why do you think that is? Why do you feel like it's that you don't want to fit in anymore, but you're seeking more of that belonging or the connection?
Maybe it's just age and a lot of personal development and therapy. And it's also actually really hard. It's really exhausting to fit in, because you're constantly having to evaluate yourself it's not very healthy for relationships either. Healthy relationships, you can't be compromising. In fact, my therapist told me that, she's in a, her relationship with her husband is so beautiful, but she says, we never compromise with each other. We always cooperate. And I think that's a real difference. Neither one of them compromise, but they cooperate. So they meet in the middle. And I guess there's probably a lot of learning, a little bit of realizing that some relationships have taught me that. And I guess maybe slowly but surely, as Flip It is probably an example of it, trying to be a little bit more okay with me and to be showing up as I am without having to worry about whether I'm fitting in or doing it perfectly
So say if there's someone right now listening to this and they are in the space of constantly just trying to fit in, like there's a jigsaw piece and they're like just putting it in, trying to like get it in, but they know that that's not meant to be for them, but they don't know how to step in. What would you say to them as advice, or what advice would you give them?
The jigsaw piece. Yeah, I used to have a platform called Jigsaw, which is about jigsaw pieces. Yeah, it was an art-based platform where everyone had their understanding your piece in the puzzle. People could feel like their piece. They could share their story in a way and fit in.
That into is one, so one, creative. One. That is so, so creative. I love that.
Yeah, I stopped it. But lots of people sent me their artworks, which was, I said, that your piece in the puzzle, and it agrees to create one big puzzle. We all feel connected.
I love how you're creative. Your mind is.
Thank you. I would say your piece of puzzle is perfectly imperfect. It is something to shine, to hold, to think as if it's your little superpower, that, wow, this is me. No one else has got this piece of the puzzle. It's like your gold, your magic treasure. And to own it and to let it shine and to know that there is a place for that piece of puzzle. It will fit somewhere. It will belong somewhere. But there is nothing like a piece of puzzle where you're trying to force it to fit and you're like, oh, but I'm sure it's this piece, but it doesn't quite slot in, like a piece of that smooth slotting. So don't don't jeopardize that feeling that you get when it slots in perfectly or smoothly for a piece that still feels like it's a bit disconnected, because you'll know the difference. And so I would just, I wasn't going to say be kind to yourself, because if people always say that, and I think it's just like, I always think it's a bit of bullshit. Like, what does that mean? But like, have a little bit of, if you're struggling, just know that there is a place where you'll feel totally okay to belong. It might not be, it might not be where you are now. It might not be where you are next year, but there is a place where, and there are people who will make you feel, and you'll feel when you're with them, that you totally belong with your piece of the puzzle.
That is beautiful. That is really, really beautiful. I've got this image now of this someone trying to shove this piece into the puzzle and actually taking a step back and just sitting with it and thinking, hang on, like, what's my intention for this? Like, why am I trying to put myself into this? And does this really need to fit in there? And there's this like pause that comes up. That's where my brain's ran off to and starting to just, visualize that.
Yeah, because it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good, and you'll always be fighting and thinking. And so, yeah, let go of that.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a short-term fix that we try and put it in, and then it's like, yes, it's in. And it's like, no, but this isn't the way it was meant to be. So it's like just sitting. Sometimes it's just sitting with our emotions. And what does that mean? It means these big emotions that perhaps once upon a time we haven't learned to regulate, we don't know how to sit with. But when we do, it can be very powerful. And I've got one more question to ask you, which is around the glass being half full. And if someone is struggling to see the glass being half full, what advice would you give them?
Just, I guess, just know that how you feel today, you won't feel like that tomorrow or even in an hour. I was just picturing myself when I had just had the breakup, and I was in West Sussex, and I was living between bags, and I spent a bit of time with my sister, and I would walk on the beach, and I would just play Eckhart Tolle over and over again. And I remember saying to her, I was like, I can't imagine this is ever going to not, I'm not going to feel like this anymore. I'm really trying to like look at the sea and be beautiful, think how beautiful it is. And she just said, you won't, it will feel different. You will feel different. And slowly but surely my glass got fuller. And in many ways, at the time I thought, I don't want any of this to happen. I kind of wanted my life as it was. I was, my job and where I was living, and I had this idea of what was gonna, you know, my future. And then suddenly it wasn't like that the next day. But I'm so glad sitting here today speaking to you. I'm honestly so glad all of those things happened. This show wouldn't be happening. I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing. I wouldn't feel who I am. I wouldn't learn about what I don't want in a relationship and what I do going forwards. You know, it does take a long time because I care. So I feel so much. I've probably taken quite a long time to come to a place where I feel really content with it. And I'm so glad I honestly am so glad all those three things happened, because I feel I'm a better human being to myself, but also to others. And so I would just know that if your grass is draining right now, it will feel different. It will fill up with an abundance of new stories, an abundance of new characters, and you get to create that.
I love that. Absolutely love it. And when you're just saying about like how we, for me, the biggest sort of like takeaway from this is about how you've mastered your sensitivity. And what I mean by that is how you've learned to just embrace your sensitivity and not to fight it away, because by fighting it away, you're fighting away what life is here to teach you. And there's a famous quote about maybe we're here on this planet not to learn who we're meant to be, but to unlearn all the different parts of us. And sometimes it's going through these experiences where we unlearn what we thought was normal and what we thought was who we are. And that's just a constant cycle.
There is no normal, like, we're all different, and what works for one person may not work for the next. But that's cool. That's the magic.
And it, like you've said, it's the magic of life, of how unique and beautiful and imperfect we all are, which is what this podcast is all about, is just listening to people's stories and understanding what you've been through to get to where you are. And I think what your story is, or not, I think your story to date is beautiful. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
And thank you for being another story in my life. I will be very different after just speaking to you. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. And just before we end, one last question we ask everyone on the show is, do you think life is fair?
Oh, what a question.
This is at the end of every podcast
episode.
Oh
my goodness. Do I think life is fair?
Yes.
I expect you just want a one answer, don't you? I actually am going to say I don't know. I'm not sure I know that answer, because I was going to say for some people, life is very, very unfair right now. And for others, it might feel completely fine. And so I don't want to be in. I can't answer it. What a great question.
I really respect that question. I would answer it in the same way. So I respect that because it's such a big question and it just throws your mind and like, what is it fair?
Is it a great question? I will think about that. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I'll leave them words with you. I'm sure you'll come up with something creative.
Thank you so much.
But thank you so much. And I will see you on your podcast.
Thank you, Anita.
Take care.
Introducing our exclusive newsletter, your weekly dose of inspiration, insights, and empowerment. Each week, we deliver curated content straight to your inbox. And this is designed to help you navigate life's challenges and thrive. Join our community of like-minded individuals who are committed to personal growth and self-discovery. Subscribe now to start your journey towards a happier, more fulfilling life. Don't miss out.